I study the breakdown of democracy, and I don't know how to say this more clearly. We are sleepwalking towards authoritarianism.
I'm with that guy. Hate to say it.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Hey, no it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast. That's heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, up in California in Red Bluff and Redding as well, on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Also up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets. On the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Breaking news, as I'm opening the show, Desi Doyen, it looks great. Like the U.S. House has passed a measure to fund the government until early next year. That ahead of a Friday shutdown deadline in Congress. That bill now goes to the Senate. I think they avoided poison pills that Republicans have been trying to put in there. Newly elected Speaker Mike Johnson has done this with the help of Democrats, which is why they fired Kevin McCarthy a few weeks ago. But for some reason, I guess at least for now, it's okay. That bill heads to the Senate, where it will most likely be approved, I think. So there's that good news to start off the day.
Yeah, we shall see.
Everything, however, downhill from there. I want to pick up the ball a bit from yesterday's program, in which I detailed a number of Joe Biden's wildly popular programs that he has either shepherded through Congress or carried out via executive order during his first term. Whether the American people know that Joe Biden has done those things or not, given the terrible job that the American mainstream media has done in informing the American people about the American government under President Biden and all that he has done. And more specifically, yesterday, where we focused on Donald Trump's own words and promises to essentially turn the American government into an autocratic regime if he is allowed to take power for a second time next year. We had a caller on yesterday's show who was firmly brain poisoned by Trump MAGA propaganda, that the crimes that Trump committed weren't really crimes at all, that Trump is allowed to steal all the classified information that he wants after leaving office in violation of the Presidential Records Act, to refuse to give it back to the government no matter how long they ask nicely, in violation of the Espionage Act and so forth. And, all of this is just Joe Biden ordering his Justice Department to lock up Trump, according to that caller. The same nonsense that Trump himself has been claiming for months without even a single shred of evidence.
Along with many, many, many House Republicans and Senate Republicans, too.
Yeah, they're all playing along, aren't they? Anyway, that caller pretty much, represents the entire MAGA movement. He also believed there was nothing to worry about regarding Trump's promised authoritarianism. since he the caller claimed that Trump, well, he promised similar things the first time he took office. He never carried them out. Actually, he did carry out a whole bunch of them, anything that he was able to. For example, separating thousands of immigrant children from their parents and never giving them back. Stealing money from the U.S. military to try to build his pretend wall with Mexico, banning Muslims from entering the country, etc. Though most of his worst authoritarian tendencies were either blocked by courts or by members of his own government who stood in his way, who will no longer be with him during a second term if he's elected, since most of those folks want nothing to do with him anymore, and he has vowed to lock them all up in any case. Thankfully, most of our listeners do appear to know better than that guy who called in, and thankfully, even some in the corporate mainstream media, some, not yet many by any stretch as far as I can tell, but some in the corporate mainstream media who would otherwise never dare to use words like authoritarianism or fascism to describe what Donald Trump himself is now vowing to use to carry out the, quote, retribution against perceived political enemies that he himself has promised out loud on the campaign trail this year. Well, even some of those folks in the mainstream media are starting to call out what Trump is promising for what it actually is. Donald Trump spent the weekend reminding all of this by using words like, quote, vermin to dehumanize his political enemies here in the U.S. in the exact same way that, yes, Adolf Hitler did before imprisoning and exterminating millions of his own citizens, characterizing them, as Trump did, as a grave threat to the nation itself. And he did all of this, by the way, on Veterans Day.
Today, especially in honor of our great veterans on Veterans Day, we pledge to you that we will root out the communists, Marxists, fascists, and the radical left thugs that live like vermin within the confines of our country, that lie and steal and cheat on elections, and will do anything possible. They'll do anything, whether legally or illegally, to destroy America and to destroy the American dream. The real threat is not from the radical right. The real threat is from the radical left. And it's growing every day, every single day. The threat from outside forces is far less sinister, dangerous, and grave than the threat from within.
Every assertion is a confession, as
and
they
a
say.
Yeah,
where well, they will do anything, lie, steal, cheat in elections, anything they can do to destroy America. On Monday, the former Republican congressman, Morning Joe Scarborough, featured Brian Klass, a professor of global politics at the University College London, who is an expert on authoritarianism. He was on the show to discuss Trump, his rhetoric, and what it means for democracy in America. Scarborough, a former friend turned critic of Trump, asked Klass whether we needed to show more ambivalence about Trump being, well, something of a Nazi.
Again, he's lifting straight from the 1930s, straight from fascists then. I know there are a lot of professors that don't want to go there. They say, oh, well, maybe it's not fascism yet. But you see January 6th, you see Donald Trump praising the people that stormed the Capitol, tried to overthrow American democracy, and then use the same words that Nazis in Germany used in the 30s and Mussolini used in Italy. Wait, what do you want to call it? Like, you know, afternoon tea? Like, if it sounds like Nazism, if it walks like Nazism, if he makes threats the way he's making threats, I'm not exactly sure what you call it if you don't call it fascism.
Well, I think you can try to claim that there was a coincidence the first time this happened, but this has been going on for 7 years. I mean, I think this is something where it's quite clear that he's lifting not just rhetoric, but actual plans from the authoritarian playbook. I mean, every week we get a new story about how they're gearing up to sort of politicize the Department of Justice and go after their perceived enemies, the rhetoric of the echoes of history. I mean, I study the breakdown of democracy, and I don't know how to say this more clearly. We are sleepwalking towards authoritarianism. And people are not waking up to this. And the Constitution is not written with magical ink. It is protected by the people who make brave choices during moments of political peril. And we are in one of those moments. So the question is, do voters wake up as well? Because our political class is not rising to the challenge. They're not distancing themselves in the Republican Party from this rhetoric. They're just sort of pretending like it doesn't exist. And we are literally walking towards a world in which Donald Trump is going to consolidate power, politicize the rule of law, and break down democracy one day at a time. And I think that's something that we have to really grapple with as we head towards the election next year, because that is the biggest story in American politics, and nothing else comes close.
Well, I guess the good news here is that it's not just, you know, some guy with a blog and a podcast who is out here saying it, but yeah, Morning Joe Scarborough is even saying it. Experts are doing so on one of the biggest morning shows on cable TV.
It is good to see a groundswell of folks paying attention to this and sort of forcing the corporate media to pay attention as well.
Groundswell may be an overstatement at this point, but I'm glad to see are more and more. I'd love to see a groundswell. We are sleepwalking towards authoritarianism. The biggest story in American politics, and nothing else comes close, says Brian Klass. And of course, he is right. And yet, it is so unusual for this country, frankly, that I think our media is still grappling with how to cover it. Because, you know, pointing out that dehumanizing certain portions of the population as vermin in a way that Hitler and Mussolini did, well, you know, that would be perceived as taking a side in the election or something among some in the media. So I'm very happy to see Scarborough willing to do it and to see media outlets, frankly, like the Washington Post and New York Times, beginning to do it as well. When it ends up in the political 2024 coverage on your election 2024 on your local news media and on the front pages of your local papers, please let me know via bradcast@bradblog.com, if you don't mind. In the meantime, some of us responsible folks in the media need to continue to tell the story and report, not on the horse race, but on the stakes in next year's elections. It is, after all, as Klass says, the biggest story in American politics, and nothing even comes close. What the incumbent president has actually done for the American people, and what the current GOP frontrunner, incredibly enough, for the nomination of President of the United States, is actually vowing to do if he is elected a second time. Reporting those things is not, as I noted on yesterday's show, is not a partisan thing. It's just the facts. And it is what those of us in the media need to be doing. Of course, now that he is being called out on some of these things by at least some in the national media, the Trump campaign is now trying to disavow that their candidate is actually saying out loud on the campaign trail the things that he is actually saying out loud on the campaign trail. Last night, shortly after we got off air, the New York Times reported that Trump's campaign has now rejected criticism that he was echoing the language of fascist dictators with his vow to root out his political opponents like vermin. But then the campaign doubled down on such statements. The campaign said on Monday, according to the Times, that the, quote, sad, miserable existence of those who made such comparisons would be, quote, crushed with Mr. Trump back in the White House. Well, that should ease everyone's fears. As they noted, those who try to make that ridiculous assertion are clearly snowflakes grasping for anything because they are suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. That, according to Trump campaign spokesman Stephen Chung, he said, adding, quote, and their sad, miserable existence will be crushed when President Trump returns to the White House. Well, that doesn't really help, does it?
No, it doesn't.
An earlier version of that statement was even worse, in which he said the, quote, entire existence of those critics would be crushed, as opposed to the corrected version that he put out, calling for their, quote, sad, miserable existence to be crushed, as if it was somehow better. The original version was reported by The Washington Post. Chung said on Monday that he edited his initial statement, quote, seconds after sending it. And The Washington Post amended its article to include both versions. I'm not sure how one is better than the other. A spokesperson for President Biden's reelection campaign said in a statement that Trump at his Veterans Day speech had, quote, parroted the autocratic language of dictators. Many U.S. veterans gave their lives fighting in order to defeat exactly the kind of un-American ideas Trump now champions. Though violent language was a feature of Trump's last two campaigns, The Times now notes his speeches have grown more extreme as he tries to win a second term. At recent rallies and events, Trump has compared immigrants coming over the border to Hannibal Lecter, the fictional serial killer and cannibal from the movie Silence of the Lambs. He's called on shoplifters to be shot dead. In a speech in California over the weekend in New Hampshire, he again called for drug dealers to be subject to the death penalty. He has insinuated that General Mark Milley, the general that he himself appointed as the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he himself should be executed for treason. Last month, Trump told a right-wing website that migrants were, quote, poisoning the blood of the country, recalling white supremacist ideology and comments, yes, made by Adolf Hitler in his manifesto, Mein Kampf. But other than that, where did anybody get the idea that Donald Trump was being an autocrat? What? When the New York Times and former Republican Joe Scarborough are comparing remarks by a presidential candidate to those of Hitler and Mussolini, I would hope Americans and the rest of the American mainstream media would take notice. I hope they start doing their job as journalists to call this out for the menacing, deranged danger that it presents to the nation and to the world. Given the firepower at the command of U.S. presidents, rather than just, oh, you know, it's the latest political rhetoric from the campaign trail. Or worse, by ignoring it entirely. This is not normal. This is not American. And yes, I think I agree with Professor Klass that we are sleepwalking towards authoritarianism. As noted yesterday, I focused not on the several reports of late from the New York Times and the Washington Post that are reporting on Trump's purported chilling plans for a second term that have been spelled out via a plan, for example, that is available to read online called Project 2025. Instead, I focused on Trump's own actual words, his own promises of what he wants to do in a second term. Because I knew that his campaign was eventually going to try to dismiss, you know, those reported plans from those outsiders or the reporting of them as fake news. Well, sure enough, the blowback that they have been receiving since the weekend is resulting in them also trying to walk things back by doing exactly that. The Times reports today that two top officials on former President Trump's 2024 campaign have sought to distance his campaign team from news reports about plans for what he would do if voters return him to the White House. Susie Wiles and Chris LaCivita, effectively Trump's campaign managers, issued a joint statement after a spate of articles from The Times and The Washington Post and elsewhere about plans for 2025 that are being developed by the campaign itself and trumpeted on the trail by Trump, as well as efforts by outside groups led by former senior Trump administration officials who remain in direct contact with him. Wiles and La Civita focus their frustration on outside groups. So it's the outside groups. Never heard of them. Who? They did not name them specifically, but those outside groups that have devoted considerable resources to preparing, for example, lists of personnel and developing policies that would serve the next right-wing administration, frankly, whether it's Donald Trump or anybody else. Quote, the efforts by various nonprofit groups are certainly appreciated and can be enormously helpful. However, none of these groups or individuals speak for the president or his for President Trump or his campaign, they wrote, calling reports about their personnel and policy intentions, quote, purely speculative and merely suggestions. The statement noticeably stopped short of actually disavowing the groups and seemed merely intended to discourage them from speaking to the press. Please stop telling everyone what we're going to do. One problem for the Trump team, however, is that the most incendiary rhetoric and proposals have come from Trump's own mouth, they note.
On videotape.
For instance, an article in the Times in June explored Trump's plans to use the Justice Department to take vengeance on political adversaries by ordering investigations and prosecutions of them, eradicating the post-Watergate norm of the Justice Department being independent from White House political control. Trump himself said in June, quote, I will appoint a real special prosecutor to go after the most corrupt president in the history of the United States of America, Joe Biden, and the entire Biden crime family. For the record, the Trump Justice Department already appointed such a prosecutor who has, for the last 5 years, been doing exactly that, investigating the Biden crime family, though they found nothing, at least to date, that implicates Joe Biden in any sort of crimes whatsoever. And then Donald Trump himself, not some outside group, Donald Trump himself reiterated that promise to go after his political enemies, to use the Justice Department in a way that it's never been used before, at least since Watergate, to go after his enemies. He reiterated that promise just this past weekend during an interview on Univision.
They've come at me with the worst indictments. If they want to follow through on this, it could certainly happen. In reverse, if I happen to be president and I see somebody who's doing well and beating me very badly, I say, go down and indict them. Mostly, that would be, you know, they would be out of business. They'd be out. They'd be out of the election.
So who are you going to believe? Your own ears? The candidate himself or the candidate's campaign, which is trying to say, no, he didn't do that at all. Don't listen to our guy. Times recently published an extensive article on Trump's horrifying immigration plans for a second term in which he has promised what he called, quote, the largest, this is a quote from Trump, the largest domestic deportation operation in American history and the creation of huge camps to hold people, including, by the way, homeless Americans. And he's used increasingly toxic language to describe immigrants, including saying that, you know, they are, as noted in his own words, poisoning the blood of our country. One of the most Hitlery things I think you could possibly say, next to calling Americans vermin. Times article detailed plans for an immigration crackdown, in part based on a lengthy interview with Stephen Miller, the architect of Trump's White House immigration policy. And while sure, you could disavow him, well, he's not Trump after all. In fact, as the Times reported, the Trump campaign, after being approached by reporters from the paper about Trump's immigration agenda, had asked Stephen Miller to speak with them on their behalf. Miller became, in fact, a de facto campaign spokesperson. But don't listen to those outside groups. Biden's 2024 campaign pounced on the article concerning immigration, which describes plans for mass detention camps. Mass detention camps. Where have I heard of those before? Saying that Trump had, quote, extreme, racist, cruel policies that were, quote, meant to stoke fear and divide us. the statement from campaign chair managers Wiles and La Civita on Monday, hoping to backtrack on all of this, said that, quote, all 2024 campaign policy announcements will be made by President Trump or members of his campaign team. Policy recommendations from external allies are just that, recommendations. Of course, it's those campaign, outsiders, I guess. Don't listen to them. Instead, campaign policy announcements made by President Trump, those are the actual problem here. Good luck with that, Ms. Wiles and Mr. La Civita. And hopefully the mainstream corporate media will also continue to beat this same drum. And hey, Republican voters, when are y'all going to wake up? Or perhaps you already are awake. And this is what you actually want from your next president, like that MAGA caller on yesterday's show seemed to be suggesting. In any event, it is looking more and more of late like Donald Trump's name is going to be at least on the primary ballots across the country. Last week in Minnesota, the state's Supreme Court determined that election officials may not remove Trump from the ballot as per Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which bars those from public office who, after taking an oath to defend the Constitution, engaged in insurrection against it. The Minnesota court essentially punted the matter, arguing that primary elections are internal party affairs and that the party gets to decide who may or may not be on their ballots. They did, however, suggest that petitioners refile regarding the general election later. And today, in another similar challenge in Michigan, as CNN reported just before air, a Michigan judge on Tuesday shut down an effort to use the 14th Amendment's insurrectionist ban to remove Donald Trump from the state's 2024 ballot. The judge separately ruled that Michigan's Secretary of State does not have the power under state law to determine Trump's eligibility for office based on the constitutional amendment, that it would require a law from Congress before it could be used, which is not historically true. The ruling, however, marks a major victory for the former president, who has a commanding lead in the 24 Republican presidential primary race, according to recent polling. A similar challenge is still pending in Colorado, where a ruling is expected by the end of the week. Regardless of the initial rulings in these cases, however, most experts anticipate appeals will go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which will be the final arbiter of the matter. But for now, hey, message to Republican voters, at least. If y'all don't want a fascist wannabe who is more and more echoing actual Hitler every day, if you don't want Trump to represent your party in the 2024 elections, the courts do not appear ready to help you guys. Only you guys can do that at this point. As I've noted, polling in Iowa shows that candidates who are not named Donald Trump, Republican candidates who are not named Trump, are actually receiving more votes collectively than Donald Trump, or at least more support, according to the polls. But as long as you keep splitting your support among, I think now, four at least different candidates who cannot beat him on their own, as long as everyone remains in the race, well, Donald Trump is likely to be the Republican nominee next year. So good luck with that, and good luck to us all. All right, let's take a quick break here. We will come back with some news out of the Georgia case, where Donald Trump and a bunch of other co-conspirators are criminally accused of having tried to steal the last presidential election. And Desi Doyen has our latest Green News report.
Yep.
Coming up a bit later today as well. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to the Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. The Bradcast survives thanks to you and your support. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate today to help us continue to do over your public airwaves what we try to do 5 days a week. That's bradblog.com/donate, and thank you.
Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through. Just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Georgia on my mind.
I wish it was just an old sweet song that kept Georgia on my mind. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. Yes, Georgia is seemingly always on my mind these days and for the last several, year or two. Anyway, a former attorney for Donald Trump has told Georgia prosecutors that a top presidential aide said to her in December of 2020 that the boss, meaning Trump, did not plan to leave the White House, quote, under any circumstances. That according to a video recording of Jenna Ellis, who has since pleaded guilty in the criminal racketeering conspiracy indictment against Trump and 18 other co-conspirators for trying to steal the 2020 election in Georgia. The audio and video was obtained by the Washington Post. This is audio from Ellis's interview with Fulton County, Georgia prosecutors just before she pled guilty to one felony charge the next day in Fulton County Criminal Court. She is discussing her conversation with Dan Scavino, Donald Trump's golf caddy, who would eventually go on to become, yes, his deputy chief of staff in the White House because, you know, he hires only the best people. So this was her conversation with Scavino on December 19th of 2020 after they had already lost pretty much all of their court challenges claiming that the 2020 election was stolen from them.
And I emphasized to him, I thought that the claims and the ability to challenge the election results was essentially over. He said to me in a kind of excited tone, well, we don't care and we're not going to leave. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, the boss, meaning President Trump, and everyone understood the boss, that's what we all called him. He said, the boss is not going to leave under any circumstances. We are just going to stay in power. And I said to him, well, it doesn't quite work that way, you realize. And he said, we don't care.
We don't care.
Yeah, we don't care.
According to Ellis's account of her conversation with Scavino, at least, they didn't care. As of December 2020, Trump was planning to stay in the White House no matter what happened, at least if you believe noted liar Jenna Ellis, who had, frankly, every reason at that point, talking to prosecutors, to tell the truth in order to get the best deal possible for herself. That video comes from a series of recordings obtained by the Washington Post of the statements of the four defendants who have so far accepted guilty pleas in the Georgia case. Recordings that they were required to make under the terms of their deals, as they cooperate with prosecutors, and that were intended to lay out what they know that could be used against the other defendants in the case. Although some of the recordings were garbled, the paper reports, the portions of the four statements that the Post was able to review from Ellis, from Trump lawyers Ken Chesbro and Sidney Powell, and Georgia bail bondsman Scott Hall, offered previously undisclosed details about the effort by Trump and his allies to reverse his defeat, as the Post describes it here. Though later in the story, they actually described the quote, wide-ranging conspiracy to steal the 2020 election.
Okay, so that's an improvement.
Imagine that. Chesbro disclosed in his recorded statement that at a previously unreported White House meeting, he briefed Trump on election challenges in Arizona and summarized a memo in which he offered advice on assembling alternate slates of electors in key battlegrounds to cast ballots for Trump. Even though Biden had won those states, the sweeping Fulton indictment unsealed in August accuses Trump and 18 others, including Rudy Giuliani, his former personal assistant, Mark Meadows, his former chief of staff, former Justice Department lawyer Jeffrey Clark, and former Georgia GOP chair David Schaefer of a wide-ranging conspiracy to steal the 2020 election. Thank you, Washington Post. the audible portions of the Fulton County recordings, the ones that weren't garbled and that were reviewed by the Post, do not appear to directly implicate Trump, which is hardly a surprise given that, at least in my opinion, he and or his legal team seem the ones most likely to have leaked this discovery material to the media in the first place. ABC News also reported on obtaining many of these very same videos. So, of course, they don't directly implicate Trump, these selective videos, much of which has been reported about them, as those remarks from Ellis tend to offer up others as being responsible for what happened. Donald Trump didn't actually say he was going to stay in the White House. It was Dan Scavino who said it. And look, Donald Trump left on January 20 of 2021 after all, so obviously he wasn't going to go along with those crazy plans. If I was Dan Scavino, I'd get a good defense lawyer about now if he doesn't already have one, or a bus mechanic to help pull him out from under one of them.
Indeed.
Steve Sadow, Trump's lead attorney in the Fulton County case, told the Post that any, quote, purported private conversations, quote, is absolutely meaningless. The only salient and telling fact is that President Trump left the White House on January 20 of 2021 and returned to Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida. See how that works? That's the only thing that matters here. Don't listen to anything Jenna Ellis had to say, because it's not true. He left. At one point in Sidney Powell's interview, she said that Trump really believed he had won, a statement that obviously could help his defense. In fact, as it turns out, these selectively leaked clips actually kind of preview what Trump's defense is likely to be. He believed in his heart of hearts that he really did win the election, and Sidney Powell agreed and showed him evidence to that end. But the obvious point in leaking these tapes is to lay out Trump's defense, which is why it seems almost certain that it was his defense team that leaked them to the media. Other details revealed in the recordings include Powell said that if Trump had appointed her special counsel to investigate election irregularities, as she had urged him to do in that now infamous December 18 Oval Office meeting, when, among other things, by the way, they decided to move ahead with the Coffee County, Georgia voting system breach you may have heard about. Well, if she was actually appointed special counsel, she would have sought to seize election equipment across the country and could have considered using the military to do so. Again, see how that crazy Sidney Powell was responsible for all of this? She's crazy, not Donald Trump. Powell said she still believes machine fraud tainted the 2020 presidential election. See, there is still reason to believe that the election was stolen from Trump. Don't blame him if he just acted on what he truly believed. Even his own attorneys said so at the time and even now today. Scott Hall, first made famous on, well, this program after he essentially confessed to the whole Coffee County voting system breach paid for by Sidney Powell, for which Hall said he organized flights to Coffee County, etc., when he called our friend Marilyn Marks and confessed to the whole thing. Hall, on these videotapes, claimed that his role in the alleged breach of election equipment in rural Coffee County was simply that of a, quote, political tourist, and that he spent $10,000 of his own money to fly there on January 7, 2021, purely, quote, for blanks and giggles. Of course, that's not what he told Marilyn Marks on that phone call that we were the first to air on this program when he boasted about what he had done.
You know, I'm the guy that chartered the jet to go down to Coffee County to have them inspect all of those computers. I went down there. We scanned every freaking ballot.
Hall also revealed a previously undisclosed role in allegedly harassing Ruby Freeman, the Fulton County election worker who has publicly described having to go into hiding after Giuliani and others falsely accused her of counting phony ballots. Hall said that he was approached by one of the Trumpers that he surmised that he was tapped to track down Ruby Freeman because of his skills tracking down people as a bail bondsman. There's a lot more in this leak, but it's pretty obvious that it came from someone on the defense team. There is now Trump and I think 14 other co-defendants who have yet to plead guilty in Fonnie Willis's sprawling case, but it seems almost certain that the leakers are tied to Trump, and Willis is none too happy about it. On Tuesday, she filed an emergency request to have the court in Fulton County issue a protective order over discovery materials in the case to prevent these sorts of leaks of potential evidence that are clearly meant to both make the case for Trump and to show other potential flippers and witnesses how their statements will be leaked out and used against them to undermine them, to make them look foolish, etc. Willis is trying to keep any further proffer videos like this from being released to the defense, that if they want to see them, they have to come into the office and look at them. They may, quote, take notes, but they will be prohibited from creating any recordings or reproductions. The filing signed by Willis asked Fulton County Superior Judge Scott McAfee to immediately grant an emergency protective order covering all discovery materials and to schedule a hearing to issue a permanent order prohibiting disclosure of any discovery materials by any party. The judge has scheduled a Wednesday hearing on the issue, but this should be a lesson for all of the judges overseeing all of Trump's current criminal cases. He will do anything, anything to win and to threaten potential witnesses, etc. He should not be trusted any further than he can be thrown. And, well, if they don't believe me, I do hope that they literally try to throw him and find out how far that is. And my apologies for a rather Trump-heavy show today. I didn't mean this when I started out, but you know what? Things change. For example, this story came in too late for today's Green News Report, which is coming up next, but it's really important. Across every region of the United States, revved up climate change now permeates Americans' daily lives with harm. That, according to a massive new government report, the National Climate Assessment, which comes out every 4 to 5 years, was released on Tuesday with details that bring climate change's impacts down to a local level. Overall, Tuesday's assessment paints a picture of a country warming about 60% faster than the world as a whole. For some reason, I don't know, the country that uses the most fossil fuels is somehow warming faster than everywhere else. Go figure. We also get regularly smacked down with costly weather disasters, which are now averaging about $150 billion in damage each year. And we face bigger problems in the future, according to the report. Since 1970, the lower 48 states have warmed by 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 1.4 degrees Celsius. Alaska has heated up by 2.3 degrees Celsius compared to the global average of 0.9 degrees Celsius. With heat waves, drought, wildfire, heavy downpours, we are seeing an acceleration of the impacts of climate change in the U.S., said study co-author Zeke Hausfather of Berkeley Earth. Compared to earlier national assessments, this year's uses far stronger language and, quote, unequivocally blames the burning of coal, oil, and gas for climate change. The 37-chapter assessment includes an interactive atlas that zooms down to the county level. It finds that climate change is affecting people's security, health, and livelihoods in every corner of the country in different ways.
And that is an interactive tool that you can look up for your own street.
With minority and Native American communities often disproportionately found to be at risk. The U.S. will warm in the future about 40% more than the rest of the world as a total, according to the assessment. Hotter average temperatures means weather that is even more extreme than what we have seen so far. The 2,200-page report comes after five straight months when the globe set monthly and daily heat records. It comes as the U.S. has set a record with 25 different weather disasters this year alone that caused at least $1 billion each in damage. Last year alone cost the nation $178 billion. Noted President Biden on Tuesday, along with the release of the report and his latest announcement of funding to combat climate change as approved by only Democrats in the U.S. Congress, in the House and Senate, in the Inflation Reduction Act, which appropriates some $400 billion to decrease emissions and otherwise mitigate against the worst of our coming climate disasters.
This assessment shows us in clear scientific terms that climate change is impacting all regions, all sectors of the United States, not just some, all. It shows that communities across America are taking more action than ever to reduce climate risk. It warns that more action is still badly needed. We can't be complacent. Let me say that again. We can't be complacent. We have to keep going. Above all, it shows us that climate action offers an opportunity for the nation to come together and do some really big things. Anyone who willfully denies the impact of climate change is condemning the American people to a very dangerous future. The impacts we're seeing are only going to get worse, more frequent, more ferocious, and more costly. Last year alone, natural disasters in America caused $178 billion in damages. They hit everyone, no matter where, what their circumstances, but they hit the most vulnerable the hardest. But folks, none of this is inevitable. None of it's inevitable. Solutions are within reach. It takes time for the investments we're making to be fully materialized, but we just have to keep at it. We need to do more and move faster. We have the tools to do it. We're sharing this report in detail with the American people so they know exactly what they're facing and what we're going to have to do. But that's not all. Along with this assessment, I'm announcing $6 billion in new investments from the Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law to make communities across the country more resilient to climate change. It's going to be focused on key climate goals, including modernizing our aging electric grid to withstand extreme weather, reducing flood risk in communities, improving drought resilience, supporting conservation for our national parks, and advancing environmental justice for disadvantaged communities, because they're the ones always left behind. In this administration, America will be the place where great science changes what's possible.
Yeah, it's inevitable. Don't listen to that guy. The Biden administration officials do emphasize that all is not lost, and the report details many actions to reduce emissions and adapt to what is coming. Quote, so we can stop this acceleration if we as a society get our act together. Some scientists, however, said parts of the assessment are far too optimistic. Quote, the report's rosy graphics and outlook obscure the dangers approaching, said Stanford University climate scientist Rob Jackson. We are not prepared for what's coming, he said. To sort of close the loop today, in addition to sleepwalking toward authoritarianism, I think we are arguably also sleepwalking toward climate disaster.
True that.
Happy show today, huh? Anyway, to help you prepare for what's coming, our Green News Report is next. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is The Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
I hope to have more on that U.S. climate assessment on tomorrow's program.
Yes.
And what we can do about it. And hopefully much less about Donald Trump.
I hope so.
But Well, you know, I hope so, too. But we got to let people know what's happening here. And I would much rather ignore it all. But and normally this, you know, early in an election year, I would. But I think we need to help get the word out about what's actually going on here.
Yes, please. And of course, this new climate assessment that just came out as well. So we're going to cover that in more detail next time.
Correct. I hope. We'll see. In the meantime, we also have to let the world know what's going on about our climate crisis right now, as we do once again today in our latest Green News Report.
Tuvalu is extremely vulnerable to the impact of climate change.
Australia signs historic climate refuge treaty with Pacific Island nation Tuvalu. New analysis finds the last 12 months were the hottest in recorded human history. Some big policy changes after the 2023 elections. Plus,
I will not be running for re-election.
Manchin to exit the Senate.
Exit stage right. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
On day one, I'm taking all the Biden regulations, the Green New Deal, ripping it up and throwing it in the trash can where it belongs.
Well, there's some good news from Ron DeSantis. Who knew Joe Biden passed the Green New Deal? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, let's start, I think, with the least surprising news we will have all day on the Green News Report.
Yes, it's true. We have all just lived through the hottest 12-month period in recorded human history and likely the hottest in 125,000 years. That's according to a new analysis from nonprofit data firm Climate Central, which also found that 2023's historic extreme heat waves were made at least three times more likely by humanity's fossil fuel emissions that have warmed the planet dramatically. Plus, average temperatures over the past year have met or exceeded the 1.5 degrees Celsius warming threshold above pre-industrial levels that scientists warn could irreversibly damage, if not destroy, entire ecosystems.
Now, last time that came up, you said, oh, don't worry about it. It's only temporarily above 1.5. But are we quite sure it's only temporary?
Well, that's what the scientists say. And on top of that, a major new United Nations report finds that the top 20 oil-producing countries have plans on the books to increase output of oil, gas, and coal through 2030, despite warnings from the United Nations and the world's scientists that fossil fuels must be urgently phased out. The UN Production Gap Report calculates that the collective emissions from projects planned around the world will blow past Paris Climate Agreement climate targets, quote, throwing humanity's future into question. The UN says the report shows that despite the rapid growth of renewable energy around the world and governments' pledges to cut emissions, most have yet to begin grappling with how they will begin to reduce demand for and production of fossil fuels that are the primary cause of the climate crisis.
Because you thought the fossil fuel industry was just going to, leave all that in the ground?
In politics, at the third Republican primary debate held last week in Miami, a coastal city already struggling against rising sea levels, the words climate change were never spoken by candidates or the NBC moderators. They also ignored the surge in U.S.-based manufacturing for electric vehicles and wind and solar energy incentivized by President Biden's climate law, the Inflation Reduction Act. The Republican candidates pledged to repeal clean air and water rules and expand fossil fuel production, and they misled the public about the fact that the United States today is producing and exporting more oil than during the Trump administration.
Oh, you mean they lied to the American public about Joe Biden's accomplishment? Knock me over with an oil-soaked feather.
Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of the coal state of West Virginia announced he will not seek re-election in 2024, putting Democrats at high risk of losing their razor-thin Senate majority that enabled passage of the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act.
And, of course, the Green New Deal.
Which did not pass.
Oh. Then why does Ron DeSantis want to tear it up?
West Virginia's current governor, Jim Justice, is favored to win the Republican nomination. Justice is a billionaire coal baron whose companies have racked up massive unpaid mine safety and pollution violations. In the 2023 election, voters in Texas approved $10 billion in new subsidies to expand electric grid capacity.
Nice.
But most of that will go to build new natural gas power plants.
Oh.
In Maine, voters rejected a proposal to replace their private, investor-owned electric utilities with a publicly owned nonprofit, setting back efforts to push the utilities to transition to cleaner energy sources. Finally, Australia late last week signed a landmark climate and security treaty with the low-lying Pacific Island nation of Tuvalu, offering a lifeline that will allow Tuvalu residents facing displacement from rising seas the right to resettle in Australia, a refuge as their Pacific homeland is lost beneath the seas. It's the first time Australia has offered residence or citizenship rights due to the threat posed by climate change. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese announced the agreement last week.
I believe that developed nations have a responsibility to provide assistance, and that is precisely what we are doing.
People of Tuvalu may end up being among the first to retreat due to climate change. I fear they will not be the last.
Nope.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's a rising, rising tide. Oh, no, no, no. It's a rising, rising tide.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen.
Yes.
That's theoretically a good news story about Australia and Tuvalu.
It is. It's a bittersweet story.
Yeah.
It's wonderful that Australia is stepping up to help the folks in their neighborhood, the Pacific Island nations that are going to be completely inundated and disappear probably within the next century or
that's
so,
what I say.
Or sooner.
Bittersweet in that an entire nation is about to disappear. But let's continue pretending we have no problems here at all.
And I should also note that the United States and New Zealand also have some agreements with Pacific Island nations to help take some of their people who are going to have to be relocated. I think a big question will be, what happens here in the United States when you see how folks really aren't happy about migration? Will they be happy about migration from, say, Florida?
Well, we're going to have a lot of climate immigrants, I suspect, in the years ahead. We already do now, by the way, for those complaining about what goes on at the southern border. Do something about climate change, and you'll have a lot less people trying to come up from the south. All right, we got to get out. My thanks to Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It is always an honor and appreciated. If you missed any portion of today's show, want to hear it again or share it with someone you know, love, or hate, you can do so at bradblog.com for free. Why? Well, because some of you, a few of you at least, have stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves as we continue to wait to hear back on our grant application from ExxonMobil. Until then, bradblog.com/donate. Pretty please? Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site still known as Twitter, you will find me at the Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Surround.